This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
You rascal, you.
Yes, sir, I am.
Have you had enough of the wind?
Oh, my goodness. A silly thing. I actually decided I could play golf in the wind the other day on Wednesday. And I did play golf in the wind on Wednesday. Yes, I did.
Did you really?
Yeah, it played havoc with everybody. I'll tell you,
Thursday morning, I went outside, and I looked at the flags. They were limp, and I couldn't believe the wind had stopped there for a while.
Well, for a while, but it was still up there for a few more days.
You know, the pilots have had their share of challenges, by all means. When I flew into Midway the other morning, man, those wings were dipping. The horizon was going up and down.
Yeah, it is scary flying through the wind. I'll tell you, a city that is a lot windier than most people think, and flying into it sometimes isn't fun, Las Vegas.
Oh, I never thought about it.
Yeah, you've got the desert out there still by the airport. It's not a lot of development out there. And I have flown in a couple of times when winds were gusting up to 50 miles an hour. It was not a pleasant experience.
You know, that's one of those cities that you can pick out from 40,000 feet when you're flying across that part of the United States. You look down and you say, yep, that's got to be Vegas down there.
Yeah, that's right. Using a lot of electricity.
I want to commend you for correctly pronouncing Oakville.
Well, thank you, sir. That was from my days in Carbondale, keeping an eye on a lot of the smaller towns throughout the state. And Oakville also usually gets into the final, the super sectionals. They have always had good basketball teams.
You know, it's interesting. Some of those towns that pop into your mind, one town down in the southern part of the state that had great girls basketball teams was Tautopolis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, down, you mentioned Effingham. Now, Tautopolis is down in that same general vicinity. But there's one. If you're a new announcer coming into Illinois, and it's always fun sometimes listening to the the kids have just come into Channel 2 from Dayton or Terre Haute or somewhere,
right,
and to listen to them mispronounce the names. But sometimes a name can be altered a bit by even the locals. I mean, take, for example, the town of Durand, Illinois. I've heard it pronounced Durand.
Mm-hmm.
Or LaSalle. I've heard locals sometimes, you'll hear some guy say, oh, up in LaSalle. Or Lafayette, Indiana. I knew a guy who was a local guy down there. He grew up there when I was in college and worked at the local station. He'd call me up and say, how's everything around Lafayette? Lafayette? So you just have to know, I guess, if you're talking about Tiscola or Tawanda or Tautopolis.
Cairo?
Well, yeah, and of course it's Cairo,
right?
And many of the locals would argue that it's Cairo, not Cairo.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we've got, well, it may be Rio in Brazil, but it's Rio in Illinois. Mm-hmm. San Jose, California, but it's San Jose in Illinois.
Interesting.
And
very
the list
interesting.
Goes on.
Yeah.
Well, I'll talk to you a little bit later, young man.
You got a deal.
Roger Badish in the newsroom. When the conversation shifts, changes somehow. They rise to the occasion when needed in the WGN newsroom. It's 11 minutes past 5 here on the Saturday morning show. Max Armstrong with you this morning. The big O will check in with Samuelson Says in just a few minutes. Yeah, the wind has been such a challenge. And, of course, it has fanned the flames of the fires and the plains. And with some loss of life out there, too. Some young ranchers died trying to save their cattle out there this week. I may talk about that a little bit later on here on our Saturday morning show broadcast. Auctions. This time of the year, there are quite a few auctions taking place. A couple of Saturdays ago, we talked to Steve Lake, who was retiring from the business of farming in northern Illinois, and he was having an auction later that day. I understand it was indeed quite successful. There are different ways of approaching that. anymore. And, you know, some people, well, they wouldn't do anything else. They'd have a live auction on the premises with the equipment lined up and the crowds gathering, lining up their cars up and down the road. The auctioneer with a coffee wagon there and ready to take the bids. And others are saying, you know what, this online stuff has some appeal to us. The other day I talked with a co-founder of an online auction firm, Big Iron Online Auction. Mark Stock is his name, and as we visited, he pointed out they've been in the auction business about 35 years, originating, well, at the west end of the Corn Belt, as Mark told me.
Well, and yeah, technically, yeah, we started our auction company in the early 80s in Nebraska, my brother and I did, and then, of course, we morphed from the salt and pepper household auctions into the farm machinery sale auctions, and then we moved our way up to the bigger sales, working for some implement dealerships, having their sales, and then got into the online auction business in 2009.
But your history stretches back something like three decades in the auction business.
Yeah, I started in the early 80s, so I've seen everything, worked with a lot of people all across the Midwest, and had a great experience so far, and looking to work with more in the future.
Before we visited here on microphone, we were talking about the origins of the terminology of Colonel for the auctioneer. As a boy, I remembered, you know, we had a local auctioneer, Colonel M.M. Mobley, and then there was Colonel Lawrence Callis, and I never quite understood that, but there is a reason the auctioneer was called a colonel.
Yeah, back in Civil War days, when a soldier got killed in battle, back then, if they had a good pair of boots, or if they had a good coat or a good belt, even their arms, soldiers would want those items. Well, there got to be some pretty good fights about who gets what. So the colonel of that group would get in the middle of the dispute, and he would start auctioning off the items, and that's where the colonel name come from.
I'd never heard the story before. Big Iron plays what kind of a role? How do you enable getting the buyers with that person who wants to sell that equipment?
Well, it's an internet-based site. So everything we do is obviously found online. And, of course, we got a great marketing team, but through social media, through newspaper, through radio, through all types of media, we reach out to different buyers all across the country, and we showcase sellers' equipment. And it's a real simple process. They just have to register and bid just like you would putting your hand up at an on-site sale, only you just use your mouse and you click a button. So the process is very similar. But it's a lot broader market. A lot more people can attend because with mobile apps, with great technology, you can be in the line at the co-op with your tractor and your gravity wagon unloading grain. You can be planting. You can be running your combine on auto steer and watching equipment sell on every Wednesday because our auctions are always conducted on Wednesdays.
Mark, let me ask you about the psychology of an auction. You know, typically when you get people gathered around in a room or outside at an auction, that interaction, you think maybe the emotion sometimes plays a role in running up the bid. Do you miss any of that in the online auction?
Oh, no, absolutely not. In fact, we've had people come by saying, you know, I never thought this would work because standing there and watching somebody else bid would be the only way to go, but on our website, we kind of show the bid numbers of the other people. We even show the states in which they're from. So that competition is still there. And then we have a soft close or a five-minute extension. If somebody bids, it puts 5 minutes back on the clock again. So that co-bidder then has an opportunity to rethink it and then continue to bid. So that competition is just there like it has always been. Our business, we make ringman calls. So we have a team of people that when the sale's concluding, we'll actually call those co-bidders and ask them if they have any questions about the piece of machinery, if they have any questions about bidding again. And we'll be like a ringman would be on an on-site sale, just asking them, it's okay if you bid again.
Is there always a clock ticking?
There's always a clock ticking, yes. The bidding goes live about 22 days prior, and that clock starts ticking down until the final seconds run off on that clock, on that item.
How much in advance will a product or a farmer's listing be shown before the actual auction takes place?
Well, we publish it about 4 days before the bidding starts, and we have a 22-day exposure time where people can actually bid. And then, of course, we have the maximum bid feature. So if they're going to be gone and they don't have access to a computer, they can still put a maximum bid in, and the computer will bid on their behalf. So I think it's a great thing for Max Armstrong to support the maximum bid feature just because the names work so well.
Yes, it would seem to, wouldn't it, Mark? From the standpoint of, is it by product or geography? In other words, will a farmer look, if he's looking for a sprayer, will he typically go into that category or will he go into the state to see what is there? What's the basis on which the bidder may be operating?
That's a great question. We have featured sellers on our website, and if you click on that featured seller, all of those items from that seller come up on your screen. So the folks who are retiring really like that because they want to have their day in the sun. And we also have categories that you can choose from. So if you are just looking for a sprayer, a four-wheel drive tractor, a two-wheel drive tractor, a mechanical front drive tractor, all those categories show up. We also have categories by geographic region. So you can browse any type of machinery, any type of seller. There's a wide variety of bring it close to home. If you want to set a mile distance in there, you only want to look at an item that's 100 miles from home or something that's 500 miles, you can set those geographic parameters as well.
How tough is the learning curve, Mark? When you go on the website, is there any area for frequently asked questions, any guidance that the person can get when they go to the website?
You bet. We have got questions and answers, so you just go to the bottom of the page and read through those. Of course, we've got a great customer support team and a toll-free number that folks can call. You can also email your questions in if you have those questions. But as far as registering, it just takes a matter of a few minutes to get registered. And once you get approved, you have access to auction result information on our website. So items that have sold in the past then become available to you so you can do your research.
You can really get a good idea of what something is bringing.
Absolutely. Just make sure you're comparing an apple to an apple and remember the time frame. And it's very important that you look back and see what the price of corn and soybeans were when that particular machine sold, because the price of a commodity has a pretty strong influence on the value on a timeline of an auction result.
We understand that. That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. So a lot of times when you see a high figure out there, it may have been when the corn was $7 a bushel.
Mark, what feedback have you received from people who have sold their equipment through the auction and also those who have bought something and been very happy with the results? What have they told you?
Well, the people that buy it really appreciate the fact that everything we do is absolute with no reserves, and we do not charge a buyer's fee, so they don't have any extra fee that's added onto it, or they don't have to calculate that extra fee into their purchase price. So buyers really appreciate that. They also like the fact that they can call the seller and ask them questions, because we're the only auction company in the country, I think it's the only auction company in the world, that publishes the owner's name and their phone number. So that is such a huge advantage to a buyer, and it's of course very transparent. So we like to, there's no surprises, no secrets. Call up that seller and ask them questions. We also publish our Big Iron independent rep's name and phone number also, so they can look up that person and give them a call for questions. So buyers really like all of those things, and of course sellers love the fact that they're not worried about the weather anymore. If it's a blizzard on the day of their sale, it's actually a good thing because there's more people watching online, and their equipment can stay right on their place, and they don't have to load it up and take it to another location, even if they only have one or two items to sell. So there's so many advantages to using a good reputation auction online company than just taking it to a typical consignment sale.
Going into the auction, the seller knows that he or she may be getting calls and questions about what they're offering for sale.
You bet. I think the farmers like that transition. They want to be able to talk to a potential buyer, especially if you're retiring. In my 33 years of doing this, the sellers always say, I'm getting calls from all over, and that gives them a sense of satisfaction that their work wasn't for nothing. People all over the country are interested in what they have to sell. It gives them a pride factor as well.
Are there still some growers who say, doggone it, I kind of want that experience of having things lined up outside, I want to see people bidding on my stuff? Or conversely, are there people who say, I don't want to go through that emotional process, I want to make this cut and dry, and I don't want to have to see it pulled off the line?
There are some people that still like to do the on-site sales, and we do those. We still do those, bring in our crew and line everything up, sell it and catalog it. We still broadcast those sales live in real time over the internet. So we have that option available. But once people see the sheer numbers of people that are watching online versus the amount of people that come to an on-site sale, I mean, a large on-site sale is 600-700 people. Unless you got a real big sale, you might get 1,000, 1,200. But over the internet, 35,000 to 75,000 people.
Seriously, that's the kind of numbers you're dealing with?
Seriously. In fact, in March of last year during a blizzard, we were over 105,000 unique IP addresses that watched that sale. Just recently here in December, we had over 62,000 people that were watching the sale as it closed out. That's auction day numbers, not over the period of time. That was on that single auction day. So the sheer large numbers of people watching these sales, it's astounding.
And all of those folks will be registered to be able to watch?
You don't have to be registered to watch. You have to be registered, obviously, to bid.
Right.
But that's just a large number of people who are watching those sales.
Paying attention, aren't
you? You bet. Even on an on-site sale, there'll be four or five people show up in a car, and only one person will get a number. But there's just a lot of people that are watching the Big Iron Auction website.
Mark Stock is his name. He and his brother Ron are founders of what is called Big Iron Auctions. They are on the web, and you can see some of the items that are offered for sale right now. They're at bigiron.com. That's where you find them. 23 minutes past 5 of the Saturday morning show. There's more coming up here. Mike Steve will be along after the 6 o'clock news this morning on WGN Radio. You know, south of the Cheddar Curtain here, we laugh about cheese and their fascination with it in Wisconsin. But it is, of course, as you can imagine, serious business, and it is the major consumer for the dairy industry. And they had the Wisconsin, well, it was the United States champion cheese contest this past week, and Wisconsin cleaned up. Wisconsin cheesemakers continued their winning streak at the U.S. Championship Cheese Contest, sweeping the top awards and 31 competition classes. The title of Grand Champion Cheese went to Sartori's Reserve Black Pepper Bellabitano. And Wisconsin has won top honors at the country's three major cheese competitions over the past year. Little Mountain Cheese from Rowley Cheese Company earned Best of Show at the American Cheese Society competition back in July. And Emmy Roth won the World Champion Cheese Contest last year. So it's a clean sweep. And Susan Fanning, who was a vice president of the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board, said the winning streak is a testament to the tradition, the innovation, and the commitment to excellence of Wisconsin dairy farmers and Wisconsin cheese makers. And she says, not only is it proof that Wisconsin makes the most cheese in the country. Did I say the most? I think I did. The most cheese in the country. But it's the... You just naturally have to lurch into that when you're talking about cheese. But she says it's also the very best cheese. And it starts with producing the finest milk and maintaining the highest standards from the farm to the aging caves and beyond. So congratulations to Wisconsin for capturing 60% of all the awards in the U.S. Championship Cheese Contest. What are you doing today, Roger? You got to be working on your taxes or something?
No, that's next Wednesday. I got a guy.
Don't you hate that, though? I mean, I just hate the process.
I know. Well, it's gotten too much for me now. I used to do it all myself. And when it was easier, it's getting a little more complicated.
I've always put this in the hands of the professional.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a plumbing project. Call a professional.
Yep. Oh, yeah. You don't want to leave anything to chance when it comes to money, I'm telling you.
You know, if Trump would do something about this whole taxing process, just make it easier. I'd give him a big kiss. I mean, it's...
Keep everything, anything. The levels the same.
I know accountants don't want to see that, but...
Yeah. Just make it like one sheet of paper.
That's right.
Do you owe us anything? No. Okay. But we're going to have a really nice belated birthday dinner for the youngest grandgirl a little later on this evening, and...
Excellent.
That's the highlight of the day.
Oh, fantastic. Well, it's hard to get think about that. And as a rather recent grandfather, I can fully appreciate that. By all means, have a great time, sir.
Thank you, and you have a great weekend.
Thank you. Roger Battish of the WGN Newsroom. Max Armstrong back with you on the Saturday morning show, this portion of which is brought to you by Wink Products.
It's that time of year again, time to tackle some difficult tasks like cleaning those appliances. And you don't want to forget your most treasured appliance, the coffee maker. Wink Products Coffee Maker Cleaner is the perfect cleaning solution to remove those nasty mineral deposits that make coffee taste metallic and cause your coffee maker to clog. So pick up Wink Coffee Maker Cleaner today and see what a difference it makes. Learn more at WHINK.com.
Still in the desert, but making good recovery from surgery. And now that we're in the month of March, this week I want to talk about a very special day this month, March 21st. Yes, the first day of spring, but also National Agriculture Day, something we've been celebrating in this country for over a half century, not only in our nation's capital, but in civic clubs and schools and church gatherings all across the country. To say thank you to you, the farmers and ranchers and food producers who provide us with quality, nutritious food at lower prices than any country in the world. It gives us an opportunity to really say thank you. It's a good week to travel to Washington if you're a farmer or rancher, to meet with your congressman, to tell them how important it is that we do have a good farm bill written this year. It's a good time for young people, 4-H and FFA, to come to our nation's capital and to, again, visit with members on Capitol Hill. But National Agriculture Day is something that really needs to get as much attention as National Labor Day. As a matter of fact, we take Labor Day off. I think it would be a good idea down the road to take National Agriculture Day off it and to spend more time taking a look at this agricultural economy in the United States, because we get further removed from the farm generation after generation, and we need to educate people on where their food comes from and how it gets to their dinner table, along with energy and all of the other ingredients that come off the farms and ranches of America. So get out there and celebrate National Agriculture Day across the country, and I hope a lot of you will make it to Washington, D.C. on the first day of spring. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
Shannon, yes, as a matter of fact, we will be in Washington. I'll be out there as a part of the Agriculture Day observance on the 21st. I've been going out there for several years, Big O and I have, and it's been a growing participation out there we've noticed year after year. Oh, we look forward to having Big O back in action, to have that timber back in his voice once more. He'll be back soon. Well, I know he won't be back before April because his birthday is coming up on the 31st, and he always celebrates, rather, you know, he's stretched that out to about a month-long celebration now, but why not? He deserves it. 20 minutes before 6 on the Saturday Morning Show, another guy who grew up in Wisconsin, is the president and CEO of the Culver's restaurant chain. And the other day I talked with Joe Koss about how that chain shows such big support for farmers and to the FFA organization. I mean, even financially supporting FFA. Joe explained.
At Culver's, we wouldn't be who we are without the great American farmer. And we appreciate everything they do for us and the great food that they provide for us to serve to our guests.
Take us back a little bit and give us some of the background on how this appreciation for agriculture began, how you began expressing it. And I know you had a tragedy, a loss of a valued partner in the company not too many months ago.
Yeah, we did. We did. Phil Kaiser, our CEO, passed away suddenly this past fall. Great loss for our company. But Phil was the champion for the American farmer. And it was Phil who, about 5 years ago, really got us started with our Thank You Farmer program. And it's an initiative that we started because it just felt right for our business to really appreciate what the American farmer does for Culver's, and a way to give back to the FFA and a number of farming groups.
Has this been across the entire chain?
Yes, it has. In fact, our franchisees have really gotten on board and supporting the FFA at the local level. And in fact, over the past 5 years, we've raised over $1 million for the FFA. So just a tremendous support from our entire franchise community.
What have you liked about what you've learned about FFA? How would you describe it when somebody who perhaps is in the food industry but they don't have the background to appreciate FFA, what do you tell them, Joe?
Yeah, so the FFA, I think everybody thinks of as a farming organization, which of course it is, but it is really a leadership organization. I am so impressed by the individuals that we come in contact with at the FFA, just tremendous people. Great speakers, great future leaders in America.
We're standing at the booth of the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance, and they help tell agriculture's story. You must find a common thread and passion there, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's a group that we want to get more involved with, and we need to continue to educate ourselves on what it takes to provide this food supply to a growing population. So a great organization.
You find it troubling that sometimes with all of the voices that are out there trying to get the ear of the consumer, there's quite a bit of misinformation.
Yeah, and I think there is, and certainly the activists seem to have the loudest voice, and we want to make sure when we talk about farming and agriculture that we're honest and accurate about it and try to be as transparent as possible.
Obviously, you're in business to make money. I mean, there's no other reason to do what you do. You have a responsibility to the people who own the company and the shareholders. Does it fit? Does it make good sense in terms of the bottom line responsibility you do have?
In terms of our association with...
Telling Ag's story.
Oh, absolutely it does. And we understand we wouldn't be in business without the American farmer. We wouldn't have our great dairy to provide for our fresh frozen custard or the fresh never frozen beef that we serve in our restaurants. And it wouldn't be without the help of the American farmer that we wouldn't be in business. So we understand that we need them for our restaurants.
Joe Koss is his name. He told me he grew up in Wisconsin in the community of Two Rivers. Twivers, I think the locals call it up there between Manitowoc and Mishicot. But he's the president and CEO of Culver's. And when you buy stuff there, it's so impressive. You know, you drive up to the drive-up window and the bag comes out, and there's right there on the bag, it expresses their appreciation to the American farmer for the role that the farmer plays. 5:45 here on the Saturday morning show. Mike Stephen comes along after the news at 6:00 this morning. We've seen the commodity markets taking a slide here of late. Corn and soybeans dropping this week to the lowest level in about 2 months. Lowest level since January. Winter wheat slipped back to the lowest point in more than a week. Rain and snow in the forecast for this weekend out in the Plain States may have weighed on that wheat market a little bit. And crude oil has been under pressure. I don't know if you noticed yesterday, crude was down under $49 a barrel. So not only slipping under 50, but under $49. And that's a bullish report on jobs yesterday. I didn't check the value of the dollar, but I would imagine it strengthened the dollar. And that provides headwinds to the grains, too, because it makes the price of what we're exporting more expensive to the countries that want to import from us. USDA came out with a stocks report this week, and as far as corn was concerned, they left the ending stocks figure unchanged. They raised the ethanol usage by 50 million bushels, but they cut that category called feed and residual use by about 50 million bushels. And corn yesterday closed down 2¾ cents to 3.64¼. July down 2½ to 3.72 a bushel. New crop December corn slipped 1¾ cents. To 3.86½. We do see the South American harvest continuing, and there'll be a lot of focus on the growth of the second crop down there, that Safrina corn crop. And then we have that planting intentions coming up on March 31st. So between now and the 31st, the spotlight will be kind of on Brazil and Argentina. Selling in soybeans continued after that stocks report in which they bumped up the size of the Brazilian soybean crop. Holy cow, they now say it's 108 million metric tons. That's 4 million metric tons higher than the previous estimate on Brazil's bean crop. They haven't had much trouble at all in the production of the crop. Where they've been having some trouble is transporting it to the ports. There's been some ugly video of trucks trying to go up muddy roads, look like cow paths almost, moving soybeans to the ports in Brazil. Soybeans yesterday, the May contract down 4.5 to 10.06 and a half. July down 4.25 cents to 10.16 and a quarter. And the new crop November beans slipped 4.75, down under $10, down to 9.99 and three quarters. Coming up next on the Saturday Morning Show, we talk tires. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of technology in the tire. That's up next here on our broadcast. It's a company that's been around a long time. They talk about a lot of new stuff in tires for farmers, dealing with the traction, the compaction, the fuel usage of the equipment. But when I visited the other day with the president of Firestone Ag, Tony Orlando, he says, yeah, we got new stuff coming for sure, but we have a great heritage of serving the agriculture community.
We continue to invest in new products, an extensive number of new products. We've got some radial technology coming out right now with tillage equipment, some new harvest products as well coming out. So an extensive number of products coming out in 2017.
You use the word technology, and I think sometimes folks mistakenly think there is not new technology in tires. But talk about that.
So we have 82 technology, which really helps minimize compaction, also reduce the amount of fuel that you need for equipment. And we've got some great technology for mostly on radial technology, but also in bias as well.
The equipment is getting heavier. It's becoming larger and heavier, and compaction really can be a concern for the grower, especially when they're in that field under less than optimal conditions.
Yeah, anything you can do to minimize compaction and increase the yield obviously is going to be more money in the farmer's pockets, and today you especially need that.
You mentioned the research that's going on, the new products coming forward. How does that take place? How do you bring the products and test them?
So the first thing that we do is we start with an extensive amount of market research and talking to farmers, talking to OEs as well about what products that they need. And then we have an extensive research facility in Akron, Ohio. We also have the world's first tire testing center in Columbiana, Ohio as well, which we help develop our technology. But again, we have a really large number of tires coming out in 17, just a long pipeline of new products.
People might be surprised to know how far back the history of Firestone and agriculture stretches. And it's more than 50 years, more than 60 years. It's almost a century.
Yeah, it's almost a century. You're right. It's been 85 years. So Harvey Firestone was first a farmer. And his farm is back in Columbiana, Ohio, where we have this test center. And so we're really a heritage brand, Firestone, a heritage brand in farming. We were the first pneumatic farm tire, and we continue to be the leader in the field.
Back to the field for just a moment, talking about the various uses that the farmer has. It varies so much, of course, whether you're considering the seeding operation or the harvest operation or heavy tillage.
Yeah, well, whether it's tillage, sprayers, tractors, harvest equipment, even for us in forestry tires, we've got, a very large product breadth for both of those markets, and we continue to develop new technology to bring it to market based upon what we understand the farmer and the logger wants.
One thing that occurs to me, Tony, is how the farmer forgets about the tires. It really isn't top of mind for many growers until there's a problem of some sort.
That's the bottom line, is we don't want the farmer to be worrying about the tire. Our tires are very, very dependable. We want the farmer spending time in the field, not calling their dealers looking for a replacement. And this is one of the reasons why we've got an industry-leading superior product technology and a warranty. We've got a 9-year radio warranty and an 8-year bias warranty. Which is, for us, is a part of our new advertising campaign that we have around Farm Hard. It's all about making sure that the farmer knows that they can rely upon Firestone, and we want them to not worry about their products and and making sure that they're in the field, not on the sidelines, if you will.
Share with us a little more about Farm Hard, how the growers will see it, for example.
Yeah, so again, it's all centered around product durability and the importance of dependability for the farmer, making sure, again, that they're spending the time in the field, not having to worry about their product, their tire product. And so we're trying to communicate in that way, which we think is meaningful. We're backing it up with a 9-year warranty on radial tire technology, which again is superior, industry leading, and that's just another way to demonstrate we understand their needs and they can rely upon Firestone Ag.
How important is that dealer in the whole link?
Well, it's critical, particularly on the servicing side. So, you know, they will get the product, you know, from the dealer, but also the dealer is able to put the product, the tire, onto their particular type of technology. And we've got an extensive number of independent dealers across the nation, and they're a great partner for us, and we've got good connection with them.
The producer demands much, doesn't he, doesn't she, in terms of when they're busy in the field,
yeah,
they need the product now.
Yeah, and we like that. I mean, we have a very, you know, demanding customer. They've got very demanding field conditions, and we're there to serve them, and we want them to know that we stand behind them, we're dependable, and they can rely upon Firestone Ag.
We did talk about the research and the product pipeline. What's coming in the future? Obviously, you guys are trying to look ahead. Will equipment be bigger, for example?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a desire to get bigger and for the tires to carry more load, to be more fuel efficient, to minimize compaction. And we continue to, you know, look 5 or 10 years into the future and looking in that direction. But I think you can expect, you know, equipment to be bigger, tires to be bigger as well. But we're also looking at various ways in which to extend our product breadth over the number of years.
And when we see the way farmers use products and how it changes, you really have to be on your toes. I think, for example, of the sprayers, how significant the sprayer has become for farmers in this country versus, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah, farmers are always looking for an edge, and, you know, not only to maximize compaction, but to minimize their input costs. And you know, we're working with them hand in hand on new sprayer technology, new tires to support sprayers, particularly, you know, tires that can carry that load. And we've got a few new products coming out in 2017 and more in 18 that will help with that load for sprayer tires in particular, or sprayer equipment in particular.
The growers tell you what they want. Do they give you a lot of feedback?
They do. I mean, since I've been with the business, we've invested quite a lot in research, and you know, we want to make sure we know what we call the boss best, and we're out there talking with farmers a lot over the last few years, and you'll find that they're happy to talk if you're willing to listen, and that's one thing we pride ourselves on is, you know, better understanding the boss as best as possible. And using that now is to help design the products that they need.
Tony Orlando, he's president of Firestone Ag, working closely with farmers these days and with a new campaign they call Farm Hard to help the producers with their tire needs. We'll have the news coming up next here on Radio 720.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.